Hey, welcome back, everybody. Time once again to meet our community, the Hispanic business community here in Orange County, powered by the Orange County Hispanic Chamber of Commerce and Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio. Today, a rare privilege to have Reuben in the house with one of the many people he knows, an important person running for governor here today. Who'd you bring along, Reuben?
We're very fortunate. We have Javier Becerra, candidate for governor, longtime leader here in the state of California, done just many things, and we'll go over all of those things here shortly. But Javier, I want to thank you for being here. We know you have a very busy schedule, but we appreciate your partnership throughout the years, and we appreciate you being here today, and look forward to talking to you about your candidacy.
Reuben, fabulous to be here. OC Talk Radio, thanks for giving us this forum, and look forward to all the conversation.
Sounds good. We'd like to start off with our guests. Just tell us a little bit about yourself personally, your family,
sure.
That kind of thing.
Born and raised in Northern California, Sacramento. Parents are immigrant. Father was a construction worker most of his life. Oldest of eight. Very typical story for immigrants. Oldest of eight. So after sixth grade, he had to leave school, start working. When he married my mom, brought her from Guadalajara, Jalisco, Mexico, and with $12 in their pocket, they started their life in California. 4 kids later, sending all of us either to college or the military, they were able to retire, not in Utah, not in Idaho or Arizona, but here in California. I worked very hard, a construction worker and a clerical worker. I was the first to have a chance to step onto a university campus. Went to Stanford University, got my degree, law degree there as well, worked as a time as a deputy attorney general at the California Department of Justice, then became a state assemblyman, served a couple of years, went off to Congress, served 24 years in Congress. Fortunate, Governor Brown asked if I'd consider becoming the attorney general. I did. I ran. I won. I served as attorney general during the same time that Donald Trump was president the first time. And then President Biden asked if I'd consider becoming a member of his cabinet as the secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services. Did that for 4 years. I parachuted in at the very time that the COVID pandemic was hitting hardest, yeah. And had a lot of very challenging assignments to address, but it was great work, and now I'm hoping to become California's next governor.
What drove you, given your background, what drove you to want to be a public servant?
When I was at Stanford as an undergrad, we had a program called Barrio Assistance, where we would go to East Palo Alto, which is across the freeway from Stanford. And it's a very low-income community, mostly Black and Latino, still is, I think. A lot of Latino kids were new immigrant families, and they were trying to learn and still learn English. So we started doing tutoring for these kids, and I saw how little was being provided to them as they were struggling, but trying really hard to make it. And I knew right then and there, I got to do something to advocate for more than just myself. And from there, as I mentioned, I went to the AG, Attorney General's office, and then ran for office and got very lucky and won. And based myself in Los Angeles at that point. My wife's a physician, and she's been a fabulous partner. Our 3 daughters are now all grown up, professionals themselves, and we are the products of that California dream. A construction worker and a clerical worker somehow figured out how to buy a house, send their 4 kids to college or the military, and still retire in the state. I want to do the same thing for this state that so many people did for me and my parents.
That's great. Assembly, Congress, Attorney General, cabinet member. What was it like being a cabinet member in an administration?
Exciting, difficult, frustrating, exhilarating, everything you would want when you're given an honor to serve the country at that high level. People don't recognize that the Department of Health and Human Services is the largest public health enterprise in the world, with a budget that matches. Everyone knows that the Department of Defense has a huge budget. Our budget was bigger than the Department of Defense. In fact, everyone knows that the California state has a large budget. Yeah. You could put the state of California's budget together with the budget of the Department of Defense, and the Department of Health and Human Services budget is still far greater in size than the two of those combined.
Wow, that is amazing. You served 24 years in Congress. Do you think, just given your background, obviously you got an amazing background, what do you think you're going to be able to bring to being governor of the state of California out of all those roles that you've had? What is your leadership style like? What do you think makes you a little bit different than some of the people you're running against?
Get things done. when you are the CEO, especially of major enterprises and especially public enterprises like HHS or the Department of Justice in California, you don't have any choice but to get things done. When I was Attorney General, 2017 to 2021, same time Donald Trump was president the first time, just as he's doing now, he was coming after California back then. We had a lot of work trying to protect our state and our people. And so I had to do a number of things. I ended up having to not only fight him in court and win, but all the way to the Supreme Court. And at the end, I ended up having to sue Donald Trump more than 120 times. We went all the way to the Supreme Court. I defended the Affordable Care Act, which the Trump administration tried to eliminate back in his first term. We defended it, went to the Supreme Court, and won. Some people will recognize the DACA program, which is the program for Dreamers, immigrant kids who came to this country without documentation. The Dreamers, the DACA program, the Trump administration tried to eliminate that. And I sued him because of the way he tried to do it. No one thought we could win because it was an executive order, and a president can institute or rescind an executive order. But I thought he didn't do it the right way, and I went all the way to the Supreme Court and proved I was right, and today there's still a DACA program. And so you get to do a number of things. As AG, as Secretary of Health and Human Services, you recognize that you can't fail. When we were in the midst of COVID pandemic and thousands of people are dying a day, the charge from the White House was save lives.
Yeah.
So that's what we did. And as much as there was controversy with the vaccines, I will tell you that today we can roam around the country and talk to people less than six feet apart because we did what we needed to. We ended up putting some 700 million COVID vaccines into the arms of Americans. Part I'm most proud of us about in terms of that is that we never charged any American, regardless of your income, your zip code, or your status, a single penny to keep people safe.
Yeah, that was just an amazing time. And the work that you had to do to get us through that was pretty spectacular. What are your priorities if you become governor?
First and foremost, you got to address what people keep saying. It's too expensive to live in California. No one can afford to stay in California. How could a construction worker with a sixth grade education and a clerical worker who came to this country when she was 18 without ever having, either one having a chance to step into a college classroom, how could they figure out how to buy a house and send my three sisters and I to college or the military? How could they figure out how to have enough money stocked away to retire here? If a construction worker and clerical worker back then could do it, then we got to make it so that they can still do it. And that's my principal goal, is to make sure that I'm not the last of that fortunate generation that got to see what hard work gets you. And I think we're going to prove that California still rewards hard work and gives people a chance. That's the most important thing. Obviously, that means we had to build more homes. And having a construction background, my dad was in construction. I worked for a time as a road construction worker to try to help pay for college. We're going to build. We're going to build what we need. But we're also going to execute in ways that give people a sense that we got their back. We're going to trim back some of these regs that make it tough, especially for small businesses to operate. And we're going to also make sure that we don't go backwards. I've already said I'm going to be the healthcare governor for California, having so many years of history working on healthcare. We're not going to tell Californians, oh, the Trump administration just cut $1 trillion out of the Medicaid program, which is Medi-Cal here, and so therefore we can no longer insure you. No. Because at the end of the day, it makes those families suffer, but it also makes those healthcare providers suffer and this small businesses suffer, because if you don't have employees who can stay healthy because they can't afford to get healthcare, we all pay the price. And so we're going to make sure that California doesn't go backwards. And I know we can make it happen because having worked in this field for so long, there is money in healthcare. It's just not all being spent. And we're just going to make sure we get rid of that excess that it's not a, no, so much fraud. It's just, it's wasteful spending because there's so much bureaucracy in the system that keeps the money from actually going to pay the doctors and the nurses who provide the care.
Yeah, you have to look at efficiencies, right?
And absolutely.
Like you mentioned too. So we're on a campus here at UCI.
Great campus.
And we work with all the universities here. We're very blessed to be able to do that. Let's talk about education. What are your thoughts on, as being governor, education?
We got to zero in on the jobs of tomorrow. And everyone knows that tech is pushing the envelope. And we have to make sure that if someone's going to have a chance to get into a college as good as UCI, that we take full advantage. And when they graduate, they're going to land and have a great job in California.
Yeah.
In California.
Hopefully, yeah.
And that means training them for what's coming. and making sure they get paid appropriately. It also means for me, and this is where I turn to two great Americans to give people a sense of this. My mom would always say to me when I was a kid, Mijo, es mejor prevenir que remediar. It is always better to prevent than to remediate a problem. And I've always taken that. And when it comes to education, we don't educate our kids well enough. And sometimes they, when they graduate from high school, they're not ready for college or they're not ready for even skilled work. And so we have to do far better. The other great American is someone who lived a century and a half ago, Frederick Douglass. Yeah. He said, it is easier to build strong children than to repair broken men. We spend a ton of money repairing broken men and women, and we should be spending it early to build them to be strong kids who become productive Americans. And so I'm going to really focus on early education so we can make sure that we're graduating from elementary school, people who are ready to go on to middle school. And then when we graduate from middle school, they're ready to go on to high school. And then they're ready to become productive adults in college or an apprentice program. But we have to make sure that we're helping them get to the highest point they can, and then ultimately be in a place, in a job, in a career that will be there for them in the future.
That's right. Yeah, K through 12. We don't focus enough there, and we wait and we hear all the glory about the universities, and but what are we doing at the lower level? How do we do that? You mentioned small business. We're an advocate, obviously, for small business. We're a chamber. What are your kind of thoughts on being governor, what you will do in the small business realm?
There are probably three or four areas where I think I'm going to turn to small business for some real guidance. One of them is liability. The little guys cannot afford to get sued and be delayed. The cost. Some people say the big guys can do pay off, settle cases because it's just a cost of doing business. For small businesses, you can't just say, I'll settle some claim because it's just a cost of doing business. No, that could be the difference between life and death of your business. So we have to deal with liability for small businesses so that they don't have, their challenges should be about how their product sells or their service is doing, not can they survive a lawsuit. Secondly, I think that when I talked about trimming some regs, this is where small business will get to benefit. But we want to hear what some of those are, because many of those regulations aren't necessarily at the state level, they're at the local level. And by the time you pile all the state and local ordinances and regulations, it's a monster. The other thing we want to do is insurance. It's becoming really difficult, not just for people who need home insurance, but for businesses who need insurance to cover for that liability, for example. It's becoming really expensive. And we really have to take a look underneath the rug of how the insurance industry operates, because it's taxing. It's very difficult for small business. And so I would say that those are some principal areas of concern that we really try to tackle as quickly as we can. And then what I'd like to do is find out how I can get small business more connected with not just our schools, but also some of the larger enterprises that the state of California is going to be working on, so that when we start to look for who are the contractors who can do this, we got that ready list going of those small businesses that can come in. So it's not always the big guys who get to take all the business.
That's right. You mentioned earlier housing, right, and affordability. I know Gavin had talked about we needed 3 million homes. That I don't think that's happened over the last 8 years. I think, was it 700,000 or something?
Yeah.
Something like that. And it's challenging, right? You have CEQA, you have the regulations. Expand on where you think what we can do a better job of getting to where we need to do, get to that $3 million homes.
It's two sides. It's the supply side, as Econ 101. If you don't have enough supply and you got a big demand, it's going to raise prices.
We both majored in economics, so
So you got to deal with the supply issue. And that's where I think the legislature this last year and the governor did some good stuff to try to unhinge that stuck system that was making it difficult for development to occur. We're still going to make sure it's smart growth. It'll be in heavily urbanized, congested, transited areas so that you're building smart. You don't have to have a lot of extensive infrastructure. So if you're building by transit hubs, you know it's going to be easier for folks who live there to get to the place to get to work, or at least use transportation they need to get to work. When you start to get into areas that aren't as congested or as dense, Central Valley, for example, has a lot of areas. My wife's from Fresno. We do a lot of stuff in the Central Valley. There are opportunities there. You don't have to go up as high to build, but you have to be smart because now you have to put in place the infrastructure. And so what we want to do is give opportunities for communities where there is going to be an appeal. There's so many people who live just outside of the Bay Area or just outside of LA, but whose commutes become horrendous.
Yes.
And so we have to figure out how we make those hubs. So the Inland Empire is a blockbuster location now on its own. It doesn't need LA so much. Orange County, on its own, blockbuster. If we can do that where we create the centers of gravity, economic gravity, so you don't have to go from Riverside into LA to work or from Merced all the way into San Francisco to work, that'll help us a lot, but we're going to build. The other side of the coin is making it affordable. It's so tough to come up with a down payment to get into a home. Most people are paying rent that would be equivalent to what a mortgage would be.
Yeah.
They just don't have the capital to lay down the down payment. And so what we have to do is help, and there are programs there. We won't be able to do it for everybody, but I think we can do it for a good number. And I would, for example, I would put at the top of the list a lot of those public servants like our police officers, our firefighters, our nurses, our teachers. They're making a public servant salary, so they don't make as much, but they have to be in that school in that central part of the town. They have to be the firefighters taking care of your homes in town. And so they need to figure out a way so they're not having to commute an hour and a half just to get to their job and then take care of you and me in those central urbanized areas. So try to do some programs, expand programs that already exist to help them. Also then come up with some new ones. For example, we could make it so that we could help cover the mortgage insurance that some people have to pay because they don't come up with a 20% down payment.
Right.
So you have to pay insurance on that second mortgage that you take out, which makes the interest rate go up for that second mortgage. How about if the state came in and said, we're going to help, we're going to provide you with some subsidy to keep that second loan that you have to take out in order to cover the less than 20% down payment affordable? This way you get in the house. And we have programs in place where we'll essentially give you the money, lend you the money up front, zero interest. And when you sell the home, and chances are you're going to make some equity on that home, that's when you pay back the state for having given you that opportunity. And so what we want to do is create that next generation of homeowners, because there is no way most Americans, most Californians will develop real wealth unless they own assets. And the biggest asset most families will ever own, their home.
Their home. That's right. That's right. Let's talk about a little bit about the most vulnerable among us, the homeless. We've spent, since 2019, I think it's the estimate is like $24 billion. A lot of people say we don't see a lot of impact out of that. And it's a difficult issue, obviously, right? You have kids who age out after 18 or in foster care who become very vulnerable. You got families that are vulnerable financially. They might lose a job or they lose their housing or their apartment. But then you have people who are mentally ill, you have people who are addicted, you have veterans, you have just a whole bunch of different people that are affected by homelessness. How do you foresee yourself tackling that issue when you become governor?
So this takes me back to my upbringing. My parents, I was raised in a Catholic home, you take care of each other. When you'd go to church, you'd see all your friends and family members and you would do things together. And you try to help each other. How we allow people to exist on the streets, when you see the feces, human feces, or you smell the urine, and some people just walk by it. To me, that's not the tradition I grew up in.
Right.
Now, how we help you is another matter. But we need to make sure that we don't just ignore you. You're a brother or a sister. We have to figure something out. Now, I would not put you in housing that I build for you in downtown LA, one of the most expensive places for real estate. I would find a place that's far less expensive, which you may not care as much for because it takes you away from where you like to be, but I'm going to give you some place to have a shelter. And until you're up and on your feet again and working, I'm going to help you, but you don't get to choose that you get to live in downtown when others can't even afford to. They're commuting from Riverside to go to work in downtown LA. So we're going to take care of our brothers and sisters, but we'll do it for less expense because we need to get some bang for that $24 billion. The second thing I'll say is that if I'm going to take care of someone who's on the streets, I'm going to take care of someone who's in a home, who's saying, I'm working full time, my family and I are trying to survive, but we're getting desperately close to getting kicked out of our rental unit, or I may not be able to keep up my mortgage. I'm going to help you because you're working. And if you're working in California, you're special. That's the way I look at it. Again, my upbringing, my parents always worked. My dad knew every winter as a construction worker in Sacramento that he would be unemployed because you can't do a lot of road construction when the rains are down. Yeah. And so he always knew he was going to be unemployed as a construction worker. But I never saw my dad one time without working. He always figured out where he could find a job. And I want to reward that. And so if you're working hard, but you're about to get kicked out, or you're about to lose your shelter, I want to step in. I want to make sure that I'm helping you. Because if I'm willing to help someone who's already on the streets, I better be ready to help someone who's working hard and saying, I don't know if I'm going to be able to stay. Because it costs me more to pull someone off the streets and get you housed and treated right. than it does to keep someone that's who's right. in a home in that home. And so that's where I think we get better bang. I'm going to, as I said, we're always going to help our brothers and sisters. But I definitely want to help that working person, that working family who's working hard, trying to stay off the streets, but it's getting awfully close to losing it.
Yeah, no, that's good stuff. And there's so many things we can do in that regard. And we do have to look at it like that in a humanitarian.
Yeah, but be accountable.
Be accountable, that's true.
Yeah, no mayor, no supervisor should believe that they're just going to get billions of dollars and we're not going to expect some results. There's got to be accountability, including for the governor and the state of California.
Yeah, that's the only way we're going to tackle it. A lot of people talking about affordability. One of those issues is energy costs. What are your thoughts on energy here in California?
Yeah, when we're paying, a buck, maybe up to $2 more a gallon for gasoline here than other states, than the average. When in utilities, you look for our electricity. Yeah. My understanding is that if we were paying the average amount for electricity that the rest of the country on average pays, we would probably be saving, as on the residential side, about $12 billion a year as Californians, just in our residential rates, if we were paying what the average rate for utility is across the nation. It's just that we pay so much more. Actually, businesses, the rates are even higher.
Yeah,
and so the estimate is that about California businesses, because they're paying way above that national average for electricity, are probably spending about $18 billion more to pay those higher rates than they would if they were paying what the average cost of electricity is around the country. Total that up, that's about $30 billion that Californians, for their homes and for their businesses, are paying in electricity beyond what they would if they just got to pay what the national average was. You can imagine what we could do with $30 billion. We just talked about homelessness.
Yeah.
We could make it much more affordable for small businesses to stay up and running. We could make it so we could help provide those down payment assistance programs for people wanting to become first-time homebuyers. And so we have to tackle this. And I think the solution is all of the above. We have to look at every energy source possible, understanding that California is always going to try to move towards cleaner energy. We have no choice. If you've been raised in LA, you probably remember the days when the smog was so intense, you wouldn't let your kids go out, or you couldn't go out if you were a kid. We don't want to go back to that. But at the same time, you can't expect families that are working hard to be able to join that new energy revolution if they don't have the money. It's nice to buy an electric vehicle, but if you're barely making it with your 20-year-old clunker, you're just trying to survive. And so what we have to do is be realistic and bring everybody with us. That means trying every approach. So clearly, if we're going to be moving towards electricity and better generation of it, battery storage is going to be critical. Solar power, wind power are going to be, we got to keep moving, even though Washington, D.C. is making it tougher to go there. But at the same time, we have to take a look at our oil refineries. And we have to look at those natural gas power plants. We thought we were going to be able to bring them out of commission sooner than now. It looks like it will happen. And eventually we will. But what we have to do is make the transition to clean energy one where it's smooth for everyone. And that means until we can prove to the average family, that's a working family, that's on the edge of maybe losing their home, I'm not going to increase your cost because I'm expecting you to move into this new generation of energy that you yet can't afford.
Yeah. Let's talk about other infrastructure, right, needs that we have. Obviously, we've had some devastating wildfires. water. What are your thoughts on water? Where are we with water?
We could have done 30 minutes just on water.
Yeah, I know.
We're lucky. We've had more water, more rain than we expected these last few weeks. And now my understanding is there aren't any regions in the state that are considered in drought. That's great. Who knows how long that'll last? We have to do a much better job of capturing and containing water when it rains. We have to do a far better job of distributing it. And we have to come to terms. We all have to sit down and have that come to Jesus moment where we decide what are our priorities, because there's just not enough water to go around and everybody needs it. We've got the breadbasket of the world. Our ag community feeds so much of the world and certainly so much of California, and they are a major economic engine for us. We have to help make sure that development of those homes is possible, and so all those developers need to know that they're going to have a reliable source of water. We have to make sure that we know how to distribute it well. We have to make sure that when we are distributing it, that we don't have inefficient systems for that distribution that actually lose too much water and that it never really makes it to the destination for its use. So there are a lot of things on water, but first and foremost, we got to come to terms with how we're going to utilize our water and be realistic. Something has to give, and I think everybody's got to sit at the table so we make those decisions, but better make them now, because once we launch, we want to be able to succeed in building all those homes and keeping the California, the breadbasket of the world, in knowing how we're going to make sure that we protect our environment and all those industries that rely on water in the northern part of the state. And so if we do this right, we'll be okay. It's just that we have to bite the bullet and make some tough decisions. On the whole issue of wildfires, look, I think it's become clear. We're going to see these wildfires continue. So one, insurance industry has to come clean and tell us what it really costs. Because once people know what it costs, they're willing to accept it, absorb it. If you live in a really high danger, high wildfire danger area, you know you're going to have to pay more now. And maybe before we could mask it and we could subsidize that cost. I don't think the insurance industry can do that anymore. And the state's not going to try to bail out the insurance companies for trying to make the wrong choices. So we have to make sure that everybody goes eyes wide open into their living arrangements, how much it costs to stay safe from wildfires, and what it's fair to charge people, because some of us are being charged for the high risk of others. And I think everybody, again, we want to take care of our brothers and sisters, just whether it's homeless or whether it's when it comes to what it costs to do fire insurance for your home. But we have to know, we have to be able to see underneath the rug. And then let's all make that decision. And I feel comfortable saying that Californians will be fair to make sure that everyone pays their fair share.
First 100 days, what do you do?
One, we're going to make a clear health care. We're going to make sure that we don't go backwards. Everyone who's got health care will continue to have it. And I'm almost positive that with the help of the industry, the healthcare sector, we can fulfill that promise pretty quickly. And we have to, because it would cost more if people lost their health insurance coverage and then stopped going to the doctor, got sicker, and waited till it was so bad they couldn't wait. And they'd go then to the emergency room. The most expensive place, the most expensive doors in healthcare are emergency room doors. And if we're getting a whole bunch of Californians walking through emergency room doors, we're not saving any money by denying them healthcare insurance. And so I believe that one of the main priorities will be to assure Californians we're not going backwards on healthcare, regardless of all the man-made disasters coming from Washington, D.C. Secondly, plant that shovel for new construction. Show people that we are serious. We're going to build more homes so the prices come down or make them affordable, and that we're going to have a program to help you with your down payment. Third, prove to people that I listened to my mom when she would tell me mejor prevenir que remediar, or when Frederick Douglass said it is easier to build strong children than to repair broken men and women, and make sure that we're making the right investments in our schools. And then finally, tackle some of these things that we just mentioned, whether it's insurance, whether it's water, making sure people know that they're going to have a government that works, because you cannot be a novice if you want to be governor of the state of California. And one thing I can guarantee people is I've been in those hot kitchens.
Yeah.
I've had to deal with a pandemic. I had a deal with negotiating drug prices with the largest pharmaceutical companies and dropped the prices in some cases up to 80%. I had to deal with a country when COVID was hard and hitting hard. A lot of Americans were losing their jobs and their health insurance, and I had to reverse that. In 4 years, we went from losing all these insurance coverage to having more Americans covered with health insurance than ever in the history of the country, more than 300 million. When I was AG, we protected our state from the assaults coming from Washington, D.C., the first time Trump was president. And so all I can tell you is very turbulent times. And as you're sitting in that plane, you want to get home safely. You're going to want to know that the pilot who's steering that plane knows how to land it. Yeah. I could tell you, I've flown a lot of these planes, and I guarantee you I know how to land it.
Yeah. I can't believe our time is up already, but want to thank you for being here. Thank you for your partnership throughout the years. Thank you for your leadership throughout the years. And I want to wish you the best on your race for governor.
Thanks for having me. Great stuff.
And everybody, thank you for listening today. We appreciate it.
Amen.
All right. Take care.
There you have it. Another reason to tune in each and every time to meet our community. Because our community is your community. Right here in Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio. Streaming live from our studios here at the University of California, Irvine's Beale Applied Innovation Center.